This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Stu Holden, he's at, easy to follow, at Stu, S-T-U, Holden. He is a Fox Soccer TV analyst. He has been breaking it down. I was listening to him yesterday, I believe, or 2 days ago. All the days run together, I'm sure, for him, too. He is live with us now in St. Petersburg. Stu, what's it been like in Russia so far?
Clay, what's up, my man? It has been fast. It has been furious. And honestly, you nailed it. We have not. I've lost track of the days. I think we've done now 13 games in six different cities. We've been doing overnight flights. We've been doing back-to-back days. And I'm actually in St. Petersburg now. And this whole experience has been amazing. This country, as you can imagine, with Russia in the quarterfinals, and we were in Sochi the other night, and it sounds like you're watching that game against Croatia where it was just total heartbreak. But I mean, this country has World Cup fever like I've never seen before. I mean, people celebrating in the streets till 3 a.m., 4 a.m., it doesn't even matter, outside your hotel room, riding out of cars. I mean, it has just been a crazy month, to say the least.
I think the best thing you can say when a country hosts a World Cup is there have been no negative stories that really have come out, right? Everything has basically gone flawlessly. Has that been the feeling that you've gotten as well, that Russia, in terms of the country as a whole, you said you've been all over Russia, has basically put this thing on as well as it could be put on?
Yeah, and I think, you know, what's helped is Russia doing well. And we said it coming into this, that if the host nation does well, it really just helps the whole tournament and the whole feel. And I would say the one thing I've really noticed is that the Russian people have really gone out of their way to make sure that people have an enjoyable experience here. I mean, I've barely seen a piece of trash on the ground. I mean, it is one of the cleanest countries I have seen, as far as like in the big cities in Moscow and St. Petersburg. And, you know, I'm talking to you from St. Petersburg, which is one of the most beautiful cities I've been to. I think that everybody was just happy in terms of Russia, how they were doing. And then in that, it just lifts the whole atmosphere. So it's been great. I mean, and then also, part of me, imagine if we'd had Russia versus England in the semifinal. I mean, with all the stuff that's going on politically between countries and all
stories.
I mean, that
would
have been crazy.
I was all set to tweet out my joke about, you know, the poison bowl or something like that. For people who don't know, they've had the spy who was allegedly poisoned in the United Kingdom and England, and then two random people who just maybe evidently were dumpster diving have somehow also gotten poisoned and they're in critical condition. And Russia saying they had nothing to do with it. It would have been wild to have the geopolitical tensions involved in that game. So you said you've been, I think, in called games in six different places. For people who have never been to Russia, which I would imagine are the vast majority of our listener base right now, how massive of a country is Russia, and how much difference is there between, say, Sochi and St. Petersburg and Moscow in terms of the culture of those individual cities?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, and keep in mind, too, I mean, how big of a, you know, everybody knows how big of a country Russia is. Most of these games are being played in the western part of Russia, and even that, I mean, we're doing, you know, six-hour travel via airplane connecting through two different cities. And, you know, Moscow is kind of, I would equate to more of a New York-y type of feel. It's a big city. It's got all great restaurants, big, beautiful architecture. And then when you start to get to, we went to Kazan, which is, you know, the eastern point, and then Nizhny Novgorod and Rostov. I mean, it's almost like a flashback to the 1930s. You're seeing hotels and buildings and apartments that, honestly, I'm not even sure they have electricity, and these cable cars and trains that are, you know, are a total time warp. And some of these cities that weren't even open to the public in Russia, they were closed off cities because, you know, whether that was to have to do with some of the stuff they were developing. And it's really crazy. And then you're driving along this dirt road and you get to a Hampton Inn by Hilton. And you're like, oh, there's a hotel that actually has, you know, electricity and beds and good food. And it's been an experience for sure. I mean, the main cuisine in Kazan, Clay, is horse. And, you know, I tried horse last year just because I was like, I got to do it. It's part of the culture here. And now I can't even look at it on the menu, and I can't even look at a horse the same way. I mean, I feel like I'm getting a death stare from every horse I see.
We're talking to Stu Holden. Follow him on Twitter at Stu underscore Holden. Stu Holden all together. Now, you called, I was listening to you, Croatia, Russia. What was it like, contextualized for us, being in that stadium, watching that game? It's the most watched game in the United States since 1990, maybe ever in the round of eight, which is a remarkable thing about the growth of soccer in the United States. What did that game feel like from your perspective?
It was one of the craziest games I've called, just because, I mean, even going back to the group stage where we had the Russia game against Egypt, where they actually qualified for the next round. And I'm not kidding you, on the way back to our hotel, which was probably only, you know, 3 or 4 miles, we had to get out of the car and walk, because it was a log jam. It was party in the streets. It was just people going insane. I mean, the entire country just riding this wave, and this Russian team that came into this tournament with on the back of a 7-game winless streak. Everybody, they were the national joke. You know, everybody was like, we're going to lose, this team sucks. And then all of a sudden they start winning. These guys are heroes. So then to beat Spain and then to be at that game against Croatia, and for them to score that late goal to tie it up and take it to penalties, I mean, the energy in that stadium was as good as I've experienced in any sporting event in my life. And, you know, then for them to lose, actually, after, once we'd cut away from the game and we're in the stadium, the entire stadium stayed and gave them a round of applause and a standing ovation, and they walked around the field. And, you know, these guys went out like heroes and will be forever remembered in Russian sporting history. And just to see that game unfold the way it did, with heartbreak, and I mean, it was peak drama, you know, from a sporting event. It's no surprise to me that was the highest rated game we've had all tournament.
Of the four teams that are left right now, France is going to play Belgium. England is going to be playing against Croatia. Who do you make the favorite?
I think the winner of France-Belgium will win the tournament. I mean, everybody's riding this it's coming home train right now for England, and it's this new version of England that, you know, everybody, it used to have this incredible weight of wearing that English shirt, and it was all this pressure and expectation, and now everybody's buying into the fact that this is this young, exciting team with not as much pressure, and now they're in a semifinal, and they're going to win it, and the tournament's coming back to where the game all started. But I think when you get to the final, France and Belgium are the best two teams. So that's the game that we'll be here for tomorrow in St. Petersburg. And, you know, in terms of talent on that field, it's some of the best players in the entire world at club level. The combined rosters are probably worth well over $1 billion, probably wow, approaching, you know, $1.5 billion in terms of what they've been paid for on the international market. And that game could go either way, honestly. I think it's going to be a track meet. I think it's going to be one of the best games we've seen all tournament. And, you know, the winner of that, I think, goes on and wins the tournament. So if you're pushing me for an answer, I'm going to go with France.
If France and England met, which would be the favorites right now if you look at the you know, the gambling lines, France right now is a small favorite over Belgium, and then England is a small favorite over Croatia. What would, for people who may not be familiar with kind of soccer in general, what would a France versus England World Cup title, given the history between France and England over the past 1,000 years, what would that actually be like for somebody who is not necessarily plugged into the soccer universe?
Yeah, I'm trying to contextualize that, because England is kind of a you know, is a traditional powerhouse, and, you know, going back, they won the World Cup back in England in '66, and have kind of perennially underachieved since then. But still, it's England, and you think of, you know, their domestic league being the best league out there. You know, France are probably like the ultra super talented, probably like the newer version of the Boston Celtics right now, with, you know, with Kyrie Irving and some superstar players. And, you know, they're just fun to watch, because they're like a young, fun team that is all kind of coming together at the right time. And if they can get back to winning, they won the World Cup in '98, and a lot of the same comparisons to that team. And then, you know, maybe you could go with the Lakers or something for England. I know they haven't won as much recently, but, you know, it would just be that would be I think, the dream final for Fox Sports at this point. If you had France versus England, all the different storylines, some of the you know, the French players play in England, and the English players majority play at home, and these two fun, easy to root for groups playing against each other, that would smash all kinds of records, I think, in terms of viewing. And you know, we would just have endless drama. I think Belgium-Croatia would be fun too, because you'd have a first-time final, a first-time champion in terms of those two teams. But I think everybody wants the, you know, we want the big stars and the big teams and all that. England would go insane. I don't know. Have you seen any of these videos of English fans celebrating?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is just, It's amazing. I mean, you know, thousands and thousands of people just beer showering each other and jumping up and down. And, you know, they are fully on this bandwagon hoping their team wins.
We're talking to Stu Holden. He is in Russia. He's been calling these matches for Fox and for FS1 all throughout the World Cup. There are obviously two semifinals taking place on Tuesday and Wednesday. And are you calling one of those? You said you're in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, we're in St. Petersburg for Belgium, France right now.
All right. So what's amazing to me is the amount of names you have to learn. So, I mean, I want to just go to the straight broadcasting element of this. I was saying that I was listening on the radio, which was kind of fascinating sometimes, you know, during the World Cup. And the names, I'll be like, I don't even know, especially when Croatia is playing Russia. Like, I watched the first half in my house, and then I got into the car to drive back from Florida. And while we're in the car, like, I'm like, I don't know the guys on Russia well enough or the guys on Croatia well enough, outside of a few, you know, like Luka Doncic, things like that. The names sound roughly similar. I'm like, I don't even know who has the ball right now. How difficult is it? Because it's not as if, you know, how do you learn all of these names and the challenges of pronouncing them and everything else? This has to be different level for, like, a broadcast perspective.
It is. It's. I think it's a completely underrated element of broadcasting, because, in all honesty, I think it's the one part of our job that we should not get wrong, because it is a name, and you can have access to names. And then we're always in this debate, me and my the play-by-play, John Strong, the lead play-by-play for Fox, about, you know, how American do you go with the name? So, you know, you could go full,
yes,
French on a pronunciation for Benjamin Pavard or, you know, Benjamin Mendy, and then you just sound like an idiot. So,
yes,
it's like, how much do you Americanize it to make it where, you know, you're not trying to go with the full rolling of the R's for Mexican names or Russian names, and that there's so many itches on Croatia that, you know, you're getting caught between Pivaric and Kramaric and Modric, and it's interesting to say the least, and it honestly requires a lot of work to make sure, you know, A, what the guy, make sure 100% you're not confusing guys, and then B, that name just rolls off the tongue pretty comfortably to where you're not having to look down at your sheet and confirming that, especially in the early stages. It's a lot harder with, you know, when you're dealing with Iran and South Korea and Saudi Arabia and all these teams. It's a very underrated element of broadcasting that I think, you know, people take for granted.
We're talking to Stu Holden. He's live in St. Petersburg, Russia. He's going to have the France-Belgium game on tomorrow, which many of you will be watching across the country. And so let's talk World Cup in general, like broad strategy. It seems to me that this has been a very attacking and aggressive style World Cup. And I don't know whether that partially has been impacted by, it seems there have been more penalty kicks awarded, that they've tried to clean up the game a little bit, whether it's having the replay. Do you agree in general, having called as many games and watched as many games as you have, that this has been a particularly overall enjoyable and attacking style of soccer, where instead of trying to get into draws and avoid you know, making big mistakes, it seems like teams have been aggressive in their attack style. Overall, would you agree with that diagnosis of the World Cup in general?
Yeah, and it's pretty refreshing, to be honest, because I'm sure a lot of your listeners out there right now are, you know, some of the fans are probably coming around and perhaps enjoying this tournament and soccer, and, you know, the old notion of, like, there's no scoring in soccer, about, you know, the 1-0s and the 0-0 draws that we consistently get killed for. It's been nice to have a tournament where, for the first time in the history, there's no Argentina, there's no Brazil, and there's no Germany in the semifinals. You have some of these underdog teams that are pulling upsets, the unpredictability. It's been, I think, goals per game, at least through the group stage, it was higher than any other World Cup in the past. We hadn't had a 0-0 tie until the game that I did, which was the worst game of the tournament, Denmark-France, because both teams were through to the next round.
Yes.
And, yeah, it's almost just like you have so much attacking talent, and in many ways it's actually a good trend for soccer, in that we don't have as many world-class defenders these days, because all these kids grow up and they want to be, you know, these number 10s and number 9s that just run with the ball and don't really have to defend and try and score goals. And it's been great to watch. I mean, every game has had drama. Now, in saying that, we're probably going to get 0-0 go to penalty kicks tomorrow night between France and Belgium. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. And actually, at this point of the tournament, teams start to get a little bit less adventurous, and they want to make sure they don't lose, as opposed to, you know, trying to be too pleasing on the eye.
We're talking to Stu Holden. Okay, a lot of people out there, obviously the United States is not in the World Cup. You've watched all these different international teams play throughout a month in Russia. How close or how far is the United States from being able to compete, not just get back into the World Cup, because I think they probably will be able to do that, but actually be able to advance and have a legitimate chance to win in the round of 16? How far are we from that in your mind?
Yeah, well, you know, if we go back to before the tournament, the U.S.'s new team, this young group of the average age, I think, was 22. They played a friendly against France right before the World Cup started, against France's starting 11 that they'll probably roll out tomorrow, and we tied them 1-1. That's not always a great indicator of exactly where you are, because it's a friendly, and France, probably nobody was trying to get hurt and wanted to take it easy. But this new crop that we have coming through is pretty exciting. We have some really good young players, and I think if they're developed to the right way, you know, this is a team that could certainly reach at some point. I'm not trying to big it up too much right now, but, you know, with talent-wise, could match up against some of these teams in a tournament. I think we're still a long way from winning a World Cup. I think that's probably, you know, 12 to 16 years down the road if we sort out some stuff developmental-wise. And I'm not going to get into the weeds on all the stuff we need to do right and wrong, but just that, you know, we have a good generation coming through, and I really believe that if we find the right coaches structure and they're making some good changes at the top in U.S. soccer, and I agree with you, I don't think we should have trouble qualifying for the World Cup, and it's still a travesty to me that we did not qualify for this one, seeing some of the teams that were in this tournament that I know we're better than. But, you know, either way, I think we need to be competing by 2026, which would be that World Cup that we now have coming back to the U.S.
When the U.S. didn't qualify, where were you? What did you think?
I was at a bar in Santa Monica, and I was fighting back the tears, man. You know, it was, for me, I mean, this is in terms of, you know, I represented the United States in a World Cup, and I know what it meant to do that. And then also now, selfishly, this is my first tournament World Cup as the lead analyst. And, you know, I was looking forward to the U.S. games, and we all were at Fox. We invested so much in that. And I know a lot of the guys on the team and what that would mean in terms of the fallout. And it has been just a total bloodbath the last, you know, year or so since we didn't qualify. But, you know, things go on. And I think we're going to look back on this in 15, 20 years and say it was a good thing for this program. But I was devastated. I mean, I was still completely speechless and in shock. And, you know, it took me a couple of days to get over the fact that we weren't going to be in this tournament. And when you're here, I haven't even thought about it once. And, you know, you realize that now actually people back home care just as much about this tournament. I know you've seen some of the ratings. I saw you tweeting about them. The ratings for this tournament have been fantastic, considering time zones and no United States and all that stuff. So people are gripped by the World Cup either way.
You went to Clemson to play soccer. You grew up in kind of in Texas, I think. You're only 32 years old. If I had told you when you were a freshman, let's say at Clemson, hey, Stu, you know, and then in 15 years from now, you are going to be calling World Cup games in Russia for the United States as one of the lead analysts, if not the lead analyst, at the only age of 32, would you have ever believed that was possible?
No, I would have hoped I was still playing if it wasn't for these injuries that I had. But if you had told me the day that I was retiring from playing, you know, with three ACL injuries in a row, that in 3 years you're going to have a TV career, that you're going to be the lead analyst for Fox on the World Cup, I wouldn't have believed you at all. And quite frankly, it's been pretty surreal to be here, and it's been a totally different experience. I get asked by a lot of people, what's the experience like calling these games versus playing in them? And nothing will ever stack up to playing, that rush, that feeling of competing and, you know, what that brings. But still, to be broadcasting these games, you know, I feel when I'm in that stadium, I get into it, man, you know, and you have still the little butterflies before the red light comes on. And then you realize that, you know, you have to live up to these big moments and do that on TV and make sure that the viewer feels and experiences these games in the same way that you do. And that's kind of been the fun part about it. You know, it's been a blast. I've enjoyed every second of this.
When you saw, you're talking about, you're a young guy, and you've had your career. when you see a guy like, and you're going to be calling his game tomorrow, Kylian Mbappe, and again, I'm not an expert on pronouncing names. That's one of the things that blows me away about what you do. How good is he? For people who have not watched him play, how good can he be? And can you imagine being 19 on the stage that he is going to be on against Belgium tomorrow?
I mean, he's a legitimate next world superstar. He's 19 years old. He scored 4 goals in this tournament so far. He got transferred last year to Paris Saint-Germain for, I think it was 150 or 175 million euros. So, I can do the math on the conversion. I think that's north of $200 million for 19 years old. I mean, at 19 years old, I was going to parties at Clemson and not a care in the world. And to think that this guy's scoring goals on the biggest stage, he's actually committed to donating all of his winnings from this tournament to charity. This guy is going to be the next name. If this French team stays the way they do, you're going to be putting him in the conversation with Ronaldo and Messi and Pele and Maradona. I mean, he is fantastic, and he's got game-changing speed. If you watch him against Belgium, the guy's like Roadrunner. He just runs away from people, and then he's still calm and collected and can score goals. And he is certainly my player to watch over these next two games. And if France are going to win, he's going to have a big tournament.
All right, last question for you. You just mentioned it. You went to Clemson. How much money would I have to pay you to do an advertisement for South Carolina where you said my other team is the Gamecocks?
I just couldn't do it, man. I couldn't do it. I know where you're going with this. I feel like you're going Landon Donovan in Mexico on me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't want to put you on the spot on Landon Donovan, Mexico. But when we talked about this on the show, I said, look, context-wise, because a lot of people, if they're not hardcore soccer guy, they don't really understand, or even kind of casual soccer guy, the rivalry between the United States and Mexico. But they do understand, look, if you're an Ohio State guy, what it would mean to say my other team is Michigan. What it would mean if you are a, you know, Oklahoma guy to say my other team is Texas, right? I feel like college football uniquely kind of brings home the same kind of rivalries that soccer does, which is one reason why I've grown to love watching international soccer so much. I love the rivalries. And when I saw Landon Donovan say my other team is Mexico, I was like, man, I grew up a Tennessee fan. There's no way I would ever say my other team is Florida or my other team is Alabama. You're a Clemson guy. Like, I can't imagine you holding up a scarf that says my other team is South Carolina.
No, I couldn't do that. And then, you know, my wife is a Buckeye, so I see the way that she religiously roots against Michigan. And I played in that U.S.-Mexico rivalry. When we went down to Mexico, I mean, we had bags of pee thrown at us and, you know, coins thrown at our heads. And that was part of why I just love that rivalry, because, it's the one thing that you get out of bed in the morning for that game and your adrenaline is pumping, and there's a genuine hatred towards the team on the field, not off the field. I mean, we all represent Mexico, respect Mexican Americans and Mexicans. And, you know, for that to be part of the thing, I couldn't personally, because of having competed in that, you know, and Landon's his own man. He's played down in Mexico. He has a different feeling towards that than I do, but I could not root for them in this tournament. I'll say that.
Yeah, I don't imagine that anybody could. And I think if you put it in the context of college football, a lot of people totally understand that. I'll be watching tomorrow. We'll be listening. You've been killing it. Keep up the good work. We appreciate the time live from Russia. And good luck tomorrow calling the game.
Clay, my man, we'll see you soon. We'll see them for Nashville MLS.
Yeah, I can't wait. That's going to be a lot of fun. And also, I'm going to go to that U.S.-Mexico game here in Nashville on September 11th. Should be really cool. Go follow Stu Holden. I'm serious about this. Thank him for waking up and being with us. I know it's afternoon over there, evening, but still, I mean, he's got a ton of things on his plate to make the time for us. Big deal.